Still Kirby. Lovely check. Kirby!
Welcome back to another episode of the Fran Kirby Fight Club, and it's a special one because today I'm joined by Mia Eriksson to talk all things Elizabeth Gunner's daughter and, of course, Chelsea manager vacancies. Now, before we get stuck in, Mia, how are you? How's life at Linköping? Feels like you've been gone for so long, but what's been going on?
Yeah, it's been going on a lot, I can say. So, yeah, it's good. I've actually quit freelance journalism.
Oh, wow.
Because now I'm the sports manager in Linköping, and it feels kind of wrong to to do journalism at the moment. And but you know, it's like you go in on the other side of women's football before you have reported on it, talked about it from another perspective, and now you are on the inside and you know what most journalists wants to know.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the knowledge of it, and that's a different experience, you know, dealing with agents, players, and everything like that. But it's a great learning.
Well, it sounds very exciting. We know you've been away for a couple of weeks, but I thought, who better to speak to about this particular person than the Swedish women's football expert herself? And it's an interesting topic we're talking about today because there's been a lot of speculation about who is going to fill Emma Hayes' boots. We know she's leaving at the end of the season for the US women's team, the national team job, and there's been loads of names thrown around like Laura Harvey, Casey Stoney, Carla Ward. Actually, in the previous podcast, Andre and I did a little bit about it, but there's a big name in here that maybe there's not been a lot of interest around, and that is Elizabeth Gunner's daughter. As I was doing my research for this pod, it's like she doesn't exist online because nobody really knows about her unless you're an expert in the know. So my research involved watching games, watching full games, watching her style of play, but I still will relinquish control to you because you probably know more than me. So for the first segment of this podcast, we're going to do a couple of different segments. We just want to know about who she is, her former club, what she's done at her former club. Now, I've got a bunch of information down here, and it starts off with saying the name of her former club, but I cannot pronounce it. And when you said it before we started recording, I was just like, nope, I'm going to butcher that. So I'm going to leave the pronouncing to you. Can you tell us how to pronounce the name of her former club?
Yeah, in Sweden, we say Kristianstads DFF.
Yeah,
It's in the south of Sweden, part that we call Skåne, where also Rosengård is situated. Malmö FF, obviously, big club in Sweden. It's a little bit more inside the country than at the seaside. But she has been there for 15 years, and to us in Sweden and in Swedish women's football and in the league, she is probably someone we would say is the Swedish version of Emma Hayes, because she is very outspoken. She has really helped Swedish women's football a lot, and she never backs down to tell you what she thinks about things. And really good person. I've met her like 3-4 times as well.
I thought you were going to say that about similarities to Emma Hayes. First of all, from the outset of her being at a club for 15 years, we know Emma's been at Chelsea for over a decade, but it's got this sort of feeling of building a dynasty. And you said again off pod about the reasons why Elizabeth was at this club for so long, because she had a vision and she wanted to see it from start to end. And you even told me something quite interesting about her turning down a job as well.
Yeah, I can start. I actually met her in person the first time in 2020. I did an interview with her because obviously she has been in the loop many times in Sweden, because she's one of few female coaches in the Swedish league as well. But then we talked about me and her, about how she wanted to work and how she saw management and the team around her. So we spoke a lot about that. And obviously, they have academy teams in Kristianstad, where she has been, and she has built that as well together with the club. I do think she was really like, she's really admirable because of the fact that she has been coaching a team in Sweden with not so many resources, mm-hmm. if that makes sense, which makes it even more admirable that I think it was in 2020, 2021, that she managed to bring Kristianstad into a Champions League qualification. Like, the club had never been up there in the Swedish league to compete for that. And that year, I know that she turned down the job as Iceland women head coach. There was a lot of turbulence in Iceland that season that saw the head coach leave because he didn't behave very well, I think. And Elisabeth, or Beta, as we call her in Sweden, obviously we were so sure, everyone, one of us, that, okay, this is her turn. This job is like...
It's meant
it
to
has,
be.
Yeah, it's meant to be. But she turned it down because she wanted to finish what she had started with Kristianstad. And I think also, obviously, I've seen comments about from people, obviously, that seems very... they criticize the choice that a person like Elisabeth Gunnarsdottir, with the merits she doesn't have, according to them, if you compare... her to Emma Hayes that way, or even the candidates that she goes up against for this job. But people need to realize that this is a coach that has had a mission and a sporting strategy in the Swedish league with the same team for 15 years, and she has managed very, very well. This is a club, a women's club, that has been stable for 15 years with her in charge. And every year, I think she has done a really good job to adapt to the player material she has, rather than having a playing style or philosophy. She has worked with what she has got. And to her, it has been very important that her team is in balance. She has spoken a lot about, you know, she doesn't want drama in the dressing room. She wants a squad that is healthy and in balance and like to be with each other every single day and work for each other. And I think she has managed that so, so good.
And yeah, to come back to your earlier point about turning down that Icelandic job, it reminded me a little bit of how in the last decade or so, every time the Chelsea men's manager is out of a job, it's always like Emma Hayes should manage. It's become this recurring joke almost because the Chelsea men's team has had a different manager every couple of years, it seems. But it's the same idea of wanting to stick with a club because you have a certain idea. And we've seen Chelsea, the women's team, adapt over the years. When we first started out this pod, it was a very sort of chaotic style of playing with Emma Hayes. She would play all of her attackers and it wasn't clear. And then in the era of which Sam Kerr and Bethany England were here playing together, we saw a switch to a more possession-based style of football. And then the next year, and each year we've talked about how things have slowly improved. But it's very interesting to me that you've said that Elisabeth focuses on player style rather than, you know, a sense of internal identity, because I think that Emma Hayes does have that identity, and maybe something that she doesn't do well is adapt to the players she has, because often she will pick... you know, we've complained a couple of times of her picking certain players over others, and we will never know the Bethany England mystery. But that is very interesting to me, because I think that's kind of the style that top European managers are doing. Look at Barcelona, Wolfsburg, even Bayern Munich. They are changing to play in a way that suits predominantly the players. And I wonder whether that is the next step up for Chelsea.
Yeah, and what I do think makes it the fact that she is in the end race with this job is her players' management.
Mm-hmm.
This is a coach who, she's not a softie, even though she's a very good person, if that makes any sense. She dares to take the critical decisions, the hard decisions. And I also think that, from what I've heard, is that players have wanted to come to Kristianstad because of her. They want to play for her. She did a really good job with the Canadian striker Evelyn Vienz, like this last few years. I think that that's an evidence of the fact that she can, she has had a big star in her team in Sweden, but she has managed to kept the dressing room happy and in balance. And she talked a lot about that when we interviewed her for Their Pitch, our podcast that me and Amanda Zaza did a couple of years back. There's an interview with her there, and I think that people should go to Spotify to listen on that if they want to hear her deeper thoughts on how to be a manager. But to me, I must say that I'm not at all surprised that she is one of the names mentioned here. I actually kind of waited for it to happen. I do get that she's probably not known at all for people. And this is, what do you say? This is reality in women's football. I thought so, yeah. About Natalie Björn as well. You know, she has had played in the WSL for a couple of years. And then people were like, okay, who is this player, when she came to Chelsea? And I was like, okay, but if you aren't in a big team, winning the big titles, it's a bit sad that you are a surprise to people when it happens, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and it's a bit of a shame. Like, you mentioned a couple of names there in terms of big stars, but there are a couple of more recognisable names like Hedvig Lindahl and even Kosovare Aslani, who we know, you know, has played for Real Madrid as well. Players come to the team that are not just sort of mid-level or mid-range, but quite higher profile levels, and she's able to develop and adapt them. And those players have moved on, you know. Lindahl was sold to Chelsea and Aslani to PSG in 2012. So here is a more of an example of how this club has been able to process players and turn them into superstars or global stars. So it's no surprise that you mentioned there about her player managing style. Let's talk a little bit about the team itself. Now, you've already said that in terms of their tactical style, it's about specific players, but I would really like to know a little bit more about sort of formations and maybe how they play in and out of possession. I did watch a game, as I said before, I watched the Häcken FC game against Häcken FC last summer in June, and it seemed like they don't press very hard in the first possession of the game, but they are able to turn possession around in central areas and they transition quite efficiently. And that's something that reminds me a little bit of Chelsea from a few years ago.
Yeah, I'm going to say this now, because last season, 2023, for Kristianstad, it was probably a very disappointing season. She rebuilt the team.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she had lots of new players into that team in positions that were very crucial for Kristianstad, perhaps. So I would say last season, what Kristianstad, they had a lot of possession in the games, but they didn't create many mm-hmm. goal chances. I know that TV experts on Viaplay, they were discussing this very, like, heavily, because when you met Kristianstad, you know that they were going to have the ball a lot, but last season they didn't create that many goal chances. Because of the fact that was also that the first half of the season, she had Evelyn Vienz. She also had an American called Tabby Tindall, that the season before, these two players created lots of goals, probably most goals in the Damallsvenskan in 2022 together. And then she brought in another forward from a team called Piteå. And that was an Icelandic player, Elin Eiriksdottir. So she tried to play these three together. From having Tabby Tindall and Evelyn Vienz playing together up front, she also brought in the number three mm-hmm. in that attack last season. And it didn't work out. Something didn't click. So from my point of view, she's not afraid to try things if she believes in the player. Like, I think she ended the season well and stable. I think it was, she told me, because the last game of last season was against Linköping, so we spoke in the corridor after the game. Yeah. And then she told me that, okay, but you know what? When I started in Kristianstad, I think, Yeah, I'm not sure about the numbers, but she told me, like, okay, when I started coaching Kristianstad, I lost or didn't take any points from the first 12 games I played with Kristianstad.
Wow.
Or if it was 10, 12 games, I can't remember. And then she told me, but you know what? These last 10 or 12 games then, I didn't drop any points. So to me, I end on a high.
Oh, wow. That's so
on a
sweet.
High note. Anyway, so she thinks like that very much. So that was just a brief talk after the game in Linköping, because we played a draw in the last round at Linköping Stadium. So I think that it's hard to tell what kind of football she aims to play, because what I do think about her is that she will look at, okay, what kind of players do I have? And what can they achieve if they get to be the best versions of themselves? I'm here to help them to achieve that. So to me, what I do think is that she likes to have the ball.
Okay.
She likes a little bit of more possession-based football, from what I've seen in the Damallsvenskan with her, than Emma Hayes in the WSL.
So in that sense, perhaps it makes sense that last season they went through this rebuild and they're in a place where they're moving to a more possession-based style of football. Let's talk a little bit about Chelsea. Now, in terms of transition, that seems to be the big thing about Chelsea at the moment. Counter-attacking is big. We press quite high up the pitch, but we're still having some issues in the defensive arena. And of course, some of those are injury-related, with Millie Bright out and perhaps still figuring out our fullbacks. But let's say that Elizabeth was in charge of Chelsea. How do you think she might facilitate that style of possession that she's sort of cultivated so well in Sweden?
Oh,
that's a loaded question.
Yeah. It's a very hard question. But what I do think is that she could probably, this is going to be interesting if it happens now. If it happens, I do think that maybe she will tell the players to, like, breathe for 3 seconds when you win the ball,
mm-hmm.
and take a look at the options around you before going towards goal.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes when Chelsea played now, when they win the ball, they just, it's just, and
yeah,
and it's going to happen in 3 seconds. Obviously, it has worked very well, but I do think that this could probably be the last part of what Chelsea's missing if they're going to win the Champions League, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, because when you play better teams out there than the bottom table teams in the WSL, you might need to be a little bit smarter on how to use and utilize space.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be interesting to see. Not to say also is now, because I do think that this is probably I know that we have been speaking about this before, but looking at what is going on around Europe at the moment, if you look at what teams that has been Chelsea's biggest competitors in the Champions League before, yeah, obviously Sam Kerr with the ACL now, but I still think if you get the number 9 position to click and make it work, this is probably Chelsea's biggest chance to win the Champions League, because Barcelona has a lot of injured players. Lyon is still not up there as they have been before, and so on and so on. And those two teams is the biggest competitors to Chelsea, I would say. So, well, this football could win them the Champions League, but if it doesn't, I do think that what Chelsea needs is something else and different.
Yeah, I think we talk about it every season. Every season we've either gone out in Champions League or lost in the final or went out in group stages, we talk about this missing element. And last season felt like this big gap in the transfer market where we signed, you know, 5 or 6 high-profile players, and it felt this was this was the season that it was going to happen. But once again, there have been injury concerns, and that completely takes away from the campaign. If you remember last year, we had injury concerns throughout the Champions League. We faced Barcelona in the semi-final, and I think we were playing Marin Mieldo in central defence because our defensive injury crisis was so bad. And I understand we've got Natalie Bjorn now, but I think the depth of the team is in a much better place. And yes, unlike a lot of teams in Europe, high-profile teams like Barcelona, Wolfsburg, Lyon, PSG even, Hacken to a certain degree, the possession element is not there because his team is so focused on turning possession over rather than maintaining it. And I think if you think of like players like Fran Kirby and Lauren James, and even to the effort of the last match where we talked about having no Mia Fischel and playing those two as one of the number nines, it didn't work. It wasn't clicking. We had to bring on Mia Fischel at half time and things turned around very quickly. So we talked about that with Andre, about that being an experiment we tried and it's not working and we hope it doesn't happen again. But actually, maybe with a different manager and a different style of playing, that system works. It's just about figuring out how you make it happen, because, you know, we've been put in a difficult place without Sam Kerr, but this feels like maybe this season it could happen, as you say, with a lot of high-profile teams struggling with injuries. So to that degree, if Chelsea don't win it, do you think that's probably the reason why, that you said it just now, they're missing an element? Is this the element they're missing?
I'm not going to say it is the element missing.
Okay,
I'm going to say it could be the elements that they are missing. So in if we're talking about that, I would like to see a new coach try that element to see if it would work.
But not necessarily somebody from this league, right? Because I know that we've talked a little bit about other managers. What are your thoughts on Casey Stoney, Laura Harvey, even Carla Ward? Do you think it has to be somebody, not has to be, I need to stop using the sort of hard imperatives. Do you think it would be better or more beneficial if we saw somebody from that's non-English come in and sort of try their own style, as opposed to someone like Casey Stoney or Laura Harvey or Carla Ward? Could it be more interesting to have somebody more left field like Elizabeth?
I think this is an interesting topic for every league. Because obviously there, if look, you can compare it to the Swedish league, and what is happening in the Swedish national team. Also, we could talk about the Lionesses bringing in a non-English coach to make twists and turns that probably an English native coach wouldn't have tried. If that makes sense, it's the same thing. If we would have sitting here now talking about if Luis Cortes or Jonathan Giraldes would have been one of the names to come in and coach Chelsea. So what I do think is that it's the same here. What I meant, it's the same in here in Sweden, because you look at what kind of football do we have to play to win our own league, to score a lot of goals, to do whatever. So I do, to me, I think it's a hard question also, because I do get that it's about culture, it's about history, it's about respect. I wouldn't have said that Casey Stoney would have been a bad coach for Chelsea, obviously. I love her. She's also very outspoken, and she is a part of the development in the women's game. And this is a coach Chelsea needs. You don't want a coach that comes in and do not speak about the development that the women's game needs. If you are a Chelsea coach, you need to take on that role, because the club is in the front seat with that. And then I bet that they want to keep that position. But it's all about the fact is that you need to have a coach that can come in and look at a league and have a plan and an idea on how do we win games in this league with against the team in the league. You can do that in many different ways. But I usually go back now to when Sweden played England in the Euros in the semi-final and England won 4-0. that Peter Gerhardsson after the game said to media that this is what we see, is that Swedish player needs to be better 1v1. They need to be able to man-man mark better and play a high-intense type of football. So, and then you go back to the Swedish league and you look at, okay, but the three top teams in the Swedish league, what type of football do they play? And I'm going to bring Linköping up now as an example, because we are a women's club, not a double club with a men's team behind. So we don't have the resources, but what we can do is that we can watch, okay, what type of football do we want, do we think is the best to play if we want to be up there to compete. And the three top teams in Sweden, they play high press, possession-based, man-man marking all over the pitch, and you know. And then you can look at what do type of football do the top teams in England play. So I think this is, it's an interesting question, because I do think that it can either be 100% good choice to bring in another a coach from another country and culture, but it can also be hard.
Yeah,
obviously, because of the culture that you come into. So yeah, it's a big question, but I think personally that it would be good for Chelsea to bring someone in that isn't English, because of the I mean, you have a Chelsea have a lot of players from different countries and nationalities and all.
I do want to ask you and what you think about the rumours that the players have asked to have a female manager, or they want it to remain female, perhaps because there's a certain element of being represented in certain issues like body image and hormonal problems and menstruation cycles. But it seems like the rumours are that they want to keep it to a female manager. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's good that a squad feels secure enough to bring up their own opinions about it. I think that speaks for what kind of culture it is within Chelsea as a club that Emma Hayes has built. So to me, I'm not surprised at all. I do think that there are a lot more going on within Chelsea regarding the fact that Emma Hayes has brought in a female perspective to look at women's elite football. Probably things that we don't even know. I do think that no matter how good a man is on coaching football, if you have a culture of speaking a lot about female things and female perspectives and the stuff you mentioned, I think it's natural for the squad to want to have a female coach.
Okay, I think that is everything that we wanted to talk about. I do want to ask if you have any lasting thoughts. You said to me off air that you think that we might hear from a new manager very, very soon. How soon do you think it could be? Because we've had so many weeks of speculation. You would think at some point that we know that Elizabeth is in the final three. We know that we also know that Laura Harvey and Casey Stoney have both said that they're comfortable with their current roles. So now that leaves us in a little bit of an interesting situation. Both of them have said that they've been approached, but that they've sort of reiterated that they don't want to leave their current roles. So, you know, Elizabeth is the one that's kind of in the mix at the moment. Could it be a different person? Are we just talking about something that could possibly come in and we have no idea? Do you think that's what's happening behind the scenes, or possibly?
Yeah, I think people have been sleeping on the fact that Ajax also announced that their head coach is leaving at the end of the season, and that is a very good coach as well.
Yeah.
Suzanne. So I think I also think that Chelsea is in no hurry.
Yeah.
Because they want to have it right rather than have a name to present. But I do think that the process is near the end. And it's all about the fact now is that when it's the time, when is the time to reveal it?
It's interesting. I just remembered that obviously as your work with Linköping, you've had to do that yourself, right? And I know that because you've worked with my husband.
Yeah.
And I've seen some of that. I've looked over his shoulder. He's been helping you with the process of finding a new manager. And it's, I saw, you know, I won't say any more, but I saw the case put forward by both managers. So, like, you know a bit of the process of, because you've been hands in on the process of looking for new managers. You know how it feels, and sort of maybe the vibes around it.
Yeah, it's I can tell you this, that it's a very big decision a club will have to make, and you feel a lot of you feel a big responsibility towards the player that you have to get it right. And I no one can for sure know what perspective Chelsea has been looking at, but to me, when we recruited a head coach here, it was about the leadership. What kind of leadership do this person have? What football do they want to play, and what football? Also, I must say that to me, people has to realize as well is that Chelsea doesn't bring in coaches to interviews and ask them, okay, what football do you think we should play? Chelsea take people in to interview them, and then they tell them that, okay, this is our vision with our women's team. This is our sporting strategy. This is our recruitment strategy. This is the football we want to play. How do you fit in? Tell us. You don't bring in a coach that every time you change coach, you change completely how you play. I mean, look at Barcelona. They're not going to stop playing the way they do, even if the coach leaves. What you do is that you develop, and you want to see when you bring a new head coach in how the new head coach can make what's good now even better.
Yeah,
that's how you do it if you are serious about it, which I'm pretty sure that Chelsea is. So
they've got to be. You're right. It's big boots to fill, and it's different when you've had a manager here for so long, and I'm sure that will feel the same. And back in Sweden, having left from after being there for 15 years, so you're right. It's a big role to fill, especially with the ambitions Chelsea have and their sort of dominance over the domestic league as well. But we hope that we will find out soon. Before all of that, there is a football game tomorrow. We haven't really talked about that. Chelsea are facing Manchester United. What are your thoughts? Just a couple of thoughts to close off the pod. Hopefully something positive, because Andre was not very positive.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a very great football game, at least.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be very even, it's going to be very close, it's going to be a lot of battles on that pitch, and I think it's going to be a great atmosphere in Stamford Bridge. I'm looking forward to the game, and I'm positive that Chelsea will walk away with the 3 points.
You're not going to give us specific predictions? You're always so good at these as well. You give them.
Yeah,
and just...
I think that Chelsea will win 3-1.
Okay, you heard it here first, folks.
Yeah.
From me, Ericsson. And hopefully, 3-1 win at Stamford Bridge. And maybe we will then on Monday hear about a new manager too.